Welcome, everyone, to THP Radio. I'm your host, JB, and today we have a new episode of our brand new show called The Golf Industry Uncut. Each episode of Uncut will feature one of the brilliant minds from the golf industry, and they'll be placed in the hot seat to discuss equipment, technology, and the entire golf industry landscape. Today we are honored to welcome one of the brightest minds in the industry, and he is VP of Research and Development at Cobra Golf, Tom Olsovsky, to the show. Are you ready to step into the hot seat, Tom?
I'm ready, Josh.
THP Radio is your new twist on on-demand audio in the world of golf, and the Golf Industry Uncut is your complete access to the equipment world that you are craving the info on. The way the show works is easy. Once the record button is pressed, there's no editing done till the show ends, so you hear it all. Only rule we have is simple. Every guest must be accessible either on the THP forum or through social media. So before we dive right into it, I want to tell everybody you can reach TO on Twitter. It is at TO_Cobra. And you can ask him any questions you have. Sometimes he's a busy guy, so sometimes it'll take him a little bit, but he'll get back to you. I want to jump right into it. Your background is rather interesting, and your resume speaks for itself. Can you tell the readers a little bit more about who you are, the what, the whys of TO? I know they know you from Cobra, and I know your resume is a bit different than that.
Yeah, I had a little history in the old days. I actually was a component club builder before I got into the actual OEM side of the business. Mechanical engineer by degree, was in the automotive industry in the Midwest, and really liked working on golf clubs, and eventually got hired by Titleist, and then later Taylor Bade in 1996, and then most recently Cobra Puma. So been through a few different companies. Had a lot of impact on some of the early titanium drivers made in the industry, and been associated with a lot of successful products in the past.
And you've been with Cobra Golf for how long now?
Just over 2 years.
In fact, the anniversary was rather recent.
Yeah, a few months ago. It was October, actually.
So one could argue that Cobra Golf has led the way in new forms of adjustability, weight movement, and more. How far can that go with in design? And when you hear things like, well, you know, the USGA sets limits, so now it's just marketing, do you cringe and knowing that, you know, you're making changes every single day?
Well, you know, I've heard that comment for over 20 years in the industry, Josh. People say, well, you can't make it be any better. There's rules, there's regulations. But what we find is continual improvements in terms of both center of gravity, mobile inertia, and things like that. It's true, there is a speed limit, but there's no limit on how low you can make the center of gravity and how far back you can move it, as well as how far forward. So you can improve inertia, you can improve playability, and improve CG, which gives you better ball flight and more distance.
As you said, you've heard it for like 20 years, and you know, if somebody were to go back even 7 or 8 years ago, 5 years ago, and look at what you guys are doing now, it's night and day difference.
Exactly, and I think what you see is the comparison a lot of times that people make is, how much better is it than last year's club? And that's where the gains get harder to prove and more challenging, but most golfers don't replace their drivers up to 3 to 5 years. So we know that if you have a three-year-old driver, you're going to see huge improvements. The comparison between last year and this year is going to be a little tighter, but we continue to make strides there every year. And I think that's one of the things about our industry is that competitive challenges forces us to make better products because people won't buy them if they're not better.
That's actually a good way of looking at it. This year, we saw the King name come back in the form of King LTD and the King F6 lines, and it's kind of embracing the entire segment of Cobra. So I have two questions in one here. How glad were you to see the iconic name come back? And based on your history and outside of King, you've been involved with some of the best name-created drivers rather than just alphanumeric. Do you have a personal favorite?
Well, you know, we're really excited to see the King name come back. For us, that was a great part of our heritage at Cobra. And it was exciting for us because we knew that a lot of people love the name. We had heard in the past couple years that I've been here, a lot of people say, why don't you bring back that King Cobra name? It was really a great brand for you. And it'll help you with awareness and sales. And we know that that was definitely the case. We've seen some other companies bring back older names and be very successful with it. So I think those names resonate with golfers, and they bring attention to our brands. I think our biggest challenge here at Cobra Puma Golf is just getting people to realize we are in the game. We are strongly in the performance side of golf clubs, and that's something that we haven't had until a few years ago. So something we want people to definitely know about us, and we think King is a big help to do that. As far as names for me, you know, it's interesting because a lot of times we have what we call name brainstorms, and it's one of the most challenging meetings we have because there's a lot of great ideas that come no matter what the company I'm at or what is working with. It's really, names are exciting because almost anyone can pick a name. Sometimes the best names are ones you wouldn't predict. You know, I think someone years ago probably said Big Bertha was probably one of the dumbest names ever invented. So, you know, everybody kind of laughed at that, but then it turned into success. So, for me, a lot of the names are fun. You know, some of them I've had more personal stake in than others. It's hard to pick a favorite. You know, it's kind of like picking your favorite movie or your favorite child. You really can't do that. In my case, I only have one children, so it's easy. But in reality, it's hard to pick a favorite, and I don't know if I have a good favorite I can give you. But they're all part of my history, and they're all part of fun, and they're all my children in some sense.
Were you involved with the Howitzer way back when?
Yes, actually, that was one that was an interesting name because I was working with another engineer, Peter Gilbert, who's been in the industry a long time, and he and I were having this raging debate about the name. And we were out; he was out playing with someone that he didn't know at all. And when he hit a drive with it, the guy said, "That sounded like a howitzer." And that was the name that I had kind of championed, and Peter had championed another name. So I had converted him from someone I didn't even know with an accurate description of what the club sounded like. So that was kind of a fun one in terms of what it ended up being.
Yeah, that's a throwback for me because when I was growing up playing, it was either you had a howitzer, you had a Tommy gun, or you had a Judge. And
right.
That's just the way it went. And I look back at those clubs and they were tiny and everything else. We've come a long way. Before we continue, I want to remind everybody that they can discuss these topics and all the topics on the THP forum with thousands of golfers every single day. And of course, you can follow, discuss, debate, and interact with TO on Twitter at TO_Cobra. And if you include the at THP golf and the hashtag THP radio, we can include future questions on the show with Tom if he decides to come back. Next question. This one's a little difficult. As you look over the golf landscape and see great things and not so great things, and I mean speaking of growth, not products, do you think about certain clubs? And what I mean by that, does it appear as though marketing can mean more than technology rather than technology meaning more than marketing? And what can you do as a design person to change that? If it needs changing.
Sure. I think the challenge in our industry is, you know, we've got to get people excited about trying new products. And then give them technology stories that both make sense and are, you know, useful. We like to say cool stuff that works here at Cobra Golf. So that's what we try and do every day. And in reality, I think it's all part of the puzzle that you have to put together. You have to get the consumer excited about the product. You have to give them something that they will believe in. And then the product has to work. So we think it's all tied together. You know, there's been some cases where people say, well, it's just a marketing story. But we know that it's just a marketing story and it doesn't work. In many cases, people won't buy it because it's not better than what they had. So I think that's where you see maybe some short-term products that, or technologies, if you will. I think back to maybe the square drivers as one that was a story that sort of had some resonance, but people didn't want it, and eventually it died away. So I think the industry very quickly will find out what works and what doesn't, and usually that's what sells the best. So that's what we try and do every day.
Now, it's funny you mentioned the square drivers, because last time I was out in California, you and I had a conversation about them, and you said it wasn't necessarily that the square driver didn't work, it was that the consumer didn't kind of shift towards it, plus you guys were smart enough to know that you could do that in a traditional shape. Is that correct?
Exactly. I think, you know, the challenge is square was there to give you more forgiveness and more moment of inertia, and by things that we do now in terms of changing the structure, the materials and the design, you're able to get that moment of inertia without giving them a shape that they're uncomfortable with. You know, the way I look at shapes, in many cases, if you look back over the history of golf, the shapes have evolved to a certain way, mostly because it's the beauty of the golfer, the eye of the beholder, if you will, liking a certain shape. So, you know, in the wooden days, they could have made square heads, and I think I remember seeing that some were square, some were triangular, but we've evolved into what I would call more of an organic shape. And that's the shape that you see now in most golf clubs that are successful, is they have this shape that is pleasing to the eye and looks good behind the ball. Square clubs never gave that to the golfer, so that's probably why they really died out.
And I'm looking over my notes here. I believe you have never put out a square driver personally, have you?
No, I haven't.
Well, I guess you're ahead of the curve.
You know, it's some of this is a matter of timing, obviously, but you know, one of the things we study all the time is how people look at the shapes, because you're always trying to find that subtle little change that makes it even more appealing. You know, and sometimes when we stretch the boundaries of the design, you get into places that are unique in terms of shape, and you try and study, is that going to be accepted or is it not going to be accepted? So I think that's something we look at all the time. We want the club to be loved, both for its shape and performance, and in the end, that's what makes them most successful in sales.
So let's move on and talk center of gravity. Now, recently, first of all, it's been a hot topic for a couple of years, and we had a great video up on THP TV with one of your partners and Mike Yagley describing CG in the new King LTD and how it worked. Now, myself and our staff have learned so much from you guys talking about location, and I thought it would be a good conversation because, you know, the marketing out there, when they're talking about center of gravity, they're showing these diagrams that show it is like the size of a driver head when we're talking inches, when in reality, we're really talking millimeters and a much smaller thing. So how big of the area is the CG movement, and what impacts will a golfer see when it moves?
Well, we know that the CG has a huge effect on the swing, both in terms of performance as well as the feel of the golf club throughout the swing. And you really have to match that for what the golfer needs, both in his swing and in his ball flight. So we believe the CG position is critical. One of the things we've done at Cobra the last couple of years is continue to strive to keep the CG lower while providing movable weight technologies that give the benefit of performance and adjustability, but keeping that CG low. And we find in almost all cases, lower CG is better because it gives you higher launch, less spin, and in many cases, more ball speed. So that's really, again, where we talk about trying to do best performance. We're continuing to do that. And even though the club heads themselves perform under the USGA rules for speed, a lower CG can give you more speed because of the collision effectiveness. So those are really important. Now, what we have with the King LTD and with the F6 Plus driver in the front settings is both drivers have zero CG, so it's right on the line. But both of those drivers also have much more forgiveness than traditional, what I would call, players drivers. If you look at a smaller-headed player's driver or even a front-weighted player's driver, their inertias are usually 3,700 to 4,000. With King LTD, we're up at 4,700, and with the F6 Plus, we're about 4,400. So those are really big improvements in inertia, even though we have zero CG, and that's where we believe that those products best the competition in that space because it's got the lowest CG and the most inertia for that low CG.
Now, inside the driver head, and let's assume that we're looking down or our listeners are looking down at a driver that has no crown on it, how far are we talking about the movement to change the CG from what some would consider forward and what some would consider back?
Yeah, in the F6 Plus design, we can go about 6 millimeters, which is among the most ever in the industry from front to back, and that's by using the carbon track and our carbon fiber crown technologies, as well as all the savings that we make around the face and the hosel and the sleeve and those areas. You can't really move the CG low and further back and get this wide range of movement unless you take a lot of the weight out of the structures where you don't need it. So that's where they all combine together. But really, 6 millimeters is huge. That's about a 600 RPM change in terms of vertical trajectory, and it'll also have a little bit of a launch angle change, maybe just over a degree for most players. And again, that's within the consistency of what we get with golfers. We also do a lot of this testing on robots where we can find much bigger differences. And we find that from a CG front-to-back position, it's critical the way the golf club feels throughout the swing. I talk to people a lot about CG front-to-back and say, you know, when you've had the CG in the front, the club plays a lot stiffer because the head CG is not moving the shaft around as much. So many times people will think that the shaft is the problem, but actually usually it's the head CG being in the wrong spot for their swing. And what we've designed in our club is given the flexibility to try these locations and figure out what feels the best for you during the swing. That usually is going to give you the best performance. And then we can also alter that with the MyFly loft system to give you the right trajectory. So the CG fit to the golfer is one of the most critical aspects. And in our designs, all those CG positions are low. Some of the other designs on the market don't have those CGs as low in all settings.
So we know that, you know, by CG, and you were just mentioning talking about lower spin and launch, we know as a whole golfers are not a group that quickly accepts change. I'd like to think that's changing, but, you know, we were having a conversation, and this is going to be a longer probably convoluted question, but we were having a talk in the office the other day about low spin and how almost all drivers nowadays are marketed as low spin. And relatively speaking, compared to a decade ago, they're very low spin. It's really a testament to the minds in the industry and what got us there. My thought is that if golfers were more accepting of change as a whole, these designs could be even more radical in the spin department. But because of their lack of change and the lack of ability and willingness to accept more loft in a driver or even understanding it, you're not able to do that. Am I completely crazy or does that make sense?
No, I think you're pretty accurate there, Josh. I think, you know, the one thing we've learned is that, you know, golfers are slow to change, and I think that's been consistent over the years. But I would say that nowadays they're probably faster than they've ever been in terms of that ability to change. We do see golfers understanding launch and spin a lot better, both because they're getting in front of a launch monitor through the buying process, and they're going through fitting processes and things like that. So they understand it, and there's a lot more knowledge out there, I think, through what you guys do at Hackers Paradise and the other places, is to give the information about what the right spin rates are and what the right launch conditions are for best performance. So there's never been more knowledge out there. So I think golfers are much more interested in that than they have been in the past. I think the challenge that we see a little bit is, you know, more driven a lot by what I would call the conventional aspects of our game and our players, is they're used to looking at a certain loft. So if they see something with more loft, they don't quite understand that now these drivers are low CG with more loft, so you're going to get a longer distance shot. So there are some segments of the market that aren't able to play by looking at a golf club with more loft, and so that's one of the limitations we have. And again, those are the people that aren't really willing to change. I'll give you a couple stories, for example, of dealing with a tour player. Lauren Roberts years ago was a player that I dealt with when I was at TaylorMade, and Lauren was at Riviera, which is actually this week, and playing in the tournament up there. And he would hit the golf ball, and he wasn't known as a long driver of the ball, but he was always looking for more distance in terms of the equipment. So he would hit a drive, and it would bounce into the net out there at the range at Riviera. And then we were able to get him a driver that actually flew it about halfway up the net, you know, still on the fly, and definitely that shot was going to go a lot farther. But Lauren was one of these players that wasn't comfortable looking at that shot being higher and wasn't comfortable looking at the loft of his club, as well as uncomfortable with the shaft that we put in the golf club. So all those things, you know, we gave him his ending result, but he was not able to adapt and end up using those. And that's just an example of a player saying, hey, this is what I like to play. This is what I'm used to. If you could give me my same looking shot and more distance, then that would be great. That's the hard thing to do, is we know that a lot of that gain is through launch conditions, and that changes the look of the flight going out from the golfer. So those are the things that you have to wrestle with, you know, but I would say they're much more of a challenge at the highest level of the game with older type players than it would be with some of our younger players. So yeah. That challenge is really, we know we can get a more distance in some cases, but they have to accept the ball flight looking different.
If you were in charge and every consumer said, I want a TO driver, and from now on you weren't going to have anything, let's say, lower than 10.5 degrees or 12 degrees, and we're talking strictly amateurs here, how low spin could you go and what kind of distances would they see?
Well, the challenge is, you know, as we look at the demographics, I'm not sure I totally understand the question. You're saying if we didn't have lower lofts.
Correct. And we didn't have the golfers flocking towards lower lofts. So
yeah,
they would see that, what's out there.
Right. I think what we see is if you look at the marketplace, and I would say go to Texas or Florida or places like that where it's very windy, it's going to be hard-pressed to get those guys to change their perception of the ball flight because they're used to the wind so much. But if you go to the Open Championship or a windy golf course and you watch the tour players hit it, they hit it high up in the air with low spin, and that actually gives them really good flight conditions, even though it's windy. So, you know, again, this is an old mindset that's used to the high spin rates in terms of what people were used to 10, 15 years ago. But nowadays, the tour players are all hitting it high and long because they've adjusted to that ball flight. The ones who don't adjust to it don't hit it as long, and they're not as competitive. So I think with the amateurs, it's the same thing. You know, we know that there's amateurs, again, if you're playing in certain conditions where you can't produce a ball flight with your swing, we can get that ball flight up with more loft. And then it's going to be that challenge of how do you like the look of that loft. So I think that's a constant challenge that we're going to see in terms of what the lofts do. Now, we make as well, even though we have low spin heads right now with King LTD, for instance, we do make a pro version of that with lower loft because we know that some of what we would call the top of the pyramid of influence need less loft, you know, because even at a 9.5 or a 10 degree with a low CG, they're still producing too much spin. So we do make a pro head that goes from 7 to 10. Now, what you see in general, though, is those pro heads, if we go from 7 to 10 versus a 9 to 12, they're going to be 5 to 10% of your sales because, you know, they are a small portion of the population. So I think that's changing. You know, if you look back a few years ago, there was a higher percentage of 9.5s and even 8.5s sold than there are today. So it is changing slowly, and I expect it to continue to change.
Now, before we get to our segment called Fire Away, you mentioned that you guys have a pro head. Is there any other differences, because it's a question that comes up quite a bit, other than the loft of those two drivers?
Yeah, the other change we make is we make that head a little bit flatter lie-angle as well. Again, that would be more consistent with what those kind of players want. They like to have something that is a little bit flatter looking, and they also have a fade setting on that sleeve versus a draw setting that we have on the standard head. So the lie-angle is a little bit flatter, but essentially it's the same head size, head shape, just loft and lie-angle change.
Perfect. Now it's time for Fire Away. 10 topics. First thing that comes to your mind, nothing about golf. Are you ready?
Okay.
First question, you're a big Steelers fan. Can you give us a prediction for next year?
Oh, I think next year they're going to go all the way. I feel like they were really close, you know, aside from the fumble in Denver. I think they'd matched up pretty well with the last two teams in the playoffs, and they might have made it this year without that fumble. But I think next year they're going to be even stronger, and I look forward to them going all the way next year.
You're planning your Masters dinner. What's on the menu?
Oh, Masters dinner for me? I'd probably have to go with, a big steak and maybe some sushi appetizer, something like that. Pretty traditional.
Now, a lot of people don't know this, but you are from the Midwest, living on the West Coast. If I ask you which one is preferred, Midwest or West Coast, what do you choose and why?
Well, it's interesting. You know, you'd have to give the West Coast the vote on the weather. That's a pretty clear win. Where we are in San Diego, it doesn't get much better than that. It's interesting, though. You know, I love it out here. I've been over here over 20 years. I love the Midwest. I lived in New England for a while. I think I could live almost anywhere, I think other than maybe Alaska. So I would it'd be a toss-up, but I would say, you know, I'm going to go long-term West Coast just because of the weather.
Now, if you're driving into work each day, are you drive time? Are you music or talk radio?
I am music.
I didn't expect that. Favorite movie?
No, I am pretty much music all the time. I hate commercials on the radio, so I'm going music off my iPod in the car, and I got the sync from Ford, so I just talk to whatever I want.
Favorite movie?
I'd have to go with Apollo 13. That's a classic movie, some great story there. And, you know, it's kind of interesting when you think about the engineering profession that I'm in. A lot of things we do is some of those challenges that they encountered in that mission. It's really fascinating to see how they overcame those challenges and got the guys back home.
What is your favorite TV show when you're not watching golf?
That's an interesting one. You know, I watch a lot of different things, but I watch a lot of stuff on Discovery and History Channels and things like that. I do watch a couple series with my wife that are kind of entertaining, but I'm definitely more into the fact-based TV kind of stuff versus some of the other programs that are on there.
If you're grabbing a snack from a vending machine, what's the choice you're looking for first?
Oh, it depends on the mood. You know, if I'm in a mood, I'm going right for just regular old potato chips. But that's something there. I got to watch my diet a little bit too. So, it depends, but I would say just regular old plain potato chips.
Going out to dinner. Are you a fine dining guy or a mom and pop diner guy?
You know, we do a little bit of both out here, but I'm definitely more, I would say, of a mom and pop casual place. Whether it's Italian, sushi, Mexican out here is extremely popular. So those are probably the most common places I visit.
Out of all your coworkers at Cobra Puma Golf, who has the worst road rage?
The worst road rage. I've seen Yagley melt down a couple times, so he would be the most entertaining because he's also funny when he's in road rage, whereas some of the other guys get a little bit more angry. So Yagley is probably the most entertaining guy on the road in any number of ways, and he's my director of research, so it's not a usual combination you find in people.
There you have it, gang. We want to thank T.O. for coming on the show and talking to us in this new and unique format. You can join us on the THP forum to discuss and debate everything we talked about here. And, of course, follow along on Twitter at THPGolf and at TO_Cobra. Don't forget to head over to iTunes and subscribe to the Hacker's Paradise so you never miss a new episode of The Golf Industry Uncut, The Dean Has Spoken, or any of our other THP radio shows. And don't forget to leave us a review with your thoughts on iTunes and what your favorite show is. So for myself and, of course, T.O., we hope you enjoyed this new episode of The Golf Industry Uncut. Bye, everybody.